One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey, what is going on, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And of course, joining me as always is Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going?
Today is a little bit different, folks. We aren't going to beat around the bush. We are going to jump right in on it. We've got a little time constraint issue. We had no idea what we were talking to this wonderful couple that we ran a ways, and we're trying to make it all fit in on for Dark Matter and get all this going. So we don't want to let it get too carried away. We're just going to blow right past the news and get right into the meat and potatoes of this thing and jump right in it. Now, we're going to be talking tonight or today or whenever you're listening to this little dumpling. We're going to be talking to Betty Andreessen and her husband, Bob, about the book The Andreessen Affair, the true story of Close Encounter of the Fourth Kind. Now, Raymond E. Fowler is the fellow that wrote this book, but we are going to actually be talking to Betty, the woman that it actually happened to. So she's going to be telling us some really interesting stories. We had a great time talking to them. The book is, like I said, it's a reprint. The thing I like the most about this book is it's a little kind of a snippet on the cover of the book is the thing that really brought me into it. And it was a quote from Whitley Strieber, who actually, you know, everyone knows he wrote Communion. And me and Kyle always talk about that book that kind of give us the creeps. And this is his quote. Something extraordinary happened to Betty Andreessen. Maybe she encountered non-human visitors, or maybe something even more strange. Whatever her experience, her immensely powerful story awed me. Its rich and provocative imagery will remain with me forever. And I think that pretty much sums it up, folks. So stick around. I think you're going to enjoy this. This is Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got two interesting guests with us today, Betty Andreessen and her husband, Bob Luca, and they're going to tell us about their experiences. Now, this new book, well, it's not really new. It's like a reprint of an older book by Raymond Fowler, The Andreessen Affair. It's a very interesting book. I mean, it's the most detailed description of a UFO abduction that I've ever read. And it goes through their, you know, through hypnosis sessions and things like that, recounting, you know, their experiences. Betty, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Bob?
Really? Fun. Excellent.
Awesome. Well, I guess let's start out, if you could, Betty, and tell us, like, how this all began.
Okay, I'll do that. Actually, I had three other encounters before the 1962 encounter, which the Andreasen Affair book was written about. However, I had a first encounter at 7 years old, and I lived in Leominster, Mass., and I was out in the yard. My brother had built a little fort, and I was in the fort with my dolls, and I had some crackers. I was eating some crackers because my girlfriend, Dee Dee, was going to come over and play dolls with me. And all of a sudden, a bumblebee came into the fort. It was buzzing around my head, but I noticed it wasn't a bumblebee. It was a white light, like a ball of white light, kept on zipping around me, and it hit me right between the eyes on my forehead. I went down, and as I went down, I could hear a voice speaking to me, and I could hear the voice say, it was like a multiple voice, and it was saying, the wee little one is coming along fine. And after that, they said, as time goes by, I was going to be extremely happy, very happy about something. Well, that was the very first strange experience I had. The second experience I had, we had then moved to Westminster, Massachusetts. My father had bought an older farmhouse, and I was sort of a tomboy at the time, and I think I was about 12 years old, and I was always fishing, always in the woods and everything, and I happened to go in one of the old sheds that were on the property, and I saw some traps.
Now, what year was this, you think?
Well, I was 12 years old, so at seven, I was four. It was 1944.
Okay.
So I took those traps, and I thought, I'm going to catch me something, you know. And I went up into the woods because I had seen a large hole underneath some mountain laurel, and our property was such that there was woods all around it. And so I went up into the woods, and I took the trap, and I put it into the hole, and I, you know, put a stake, and the chain was hooked to the stake, and I set up the trap. Then the next day, I went to school. When I came home, I was all excited. I thought, oh, I wonder what I caught from that trap. And so I went up the hill and across, I passed the chicken coops, and I picked up some stones because every time I was in the woods, I took some stones or a stick with me because I didn't know what I would find or, you know, what could be in the woods. And I went over to where the hole was, and as I did, I could see that the stick was up that I had the chain attached to for the trap, and the trap had disappeared. So I went closer to the hole to look down to see if maybe the trap had fallen in the hole, and all of a sudden there was this gray thing, you know, like a hornet's nest, a big hornet's nest that is gray.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
Yeah, well, that's what I saw. It looked like the nest was coming right out of the hole. And instead, it was a head that was popping out, and it was a small being. And that was the actual first visible experience that I had where I saw the being, the being. And he was dressed in a gray suit, had an emblem on his chest, and he came right out and stood there. And at that point, he touched a button on his chest, and the light came out of it, hit me between the eyes again, and down I went. And I could hear that I was being examined somehow because I heard that same multiple voice, and I heard them say, she's got another year. And That's what I had recalled. That was it.
Wow. Now this voice, was it do you get the sensation that it was a calming voice? Did you feel like, I'm trying to picture in my mind what it would be like to be that. Were you terrified? Were you not scared? Were you curious? What were you feeling?
Yeah, I was wondering what was going on, how this all happened, you know, and mm-hmm. when the voice was there, yeah, I wondered, it sounded like more than one voice within it was speaking. And they said that I had another year to go. And so after that, after I awoke and I went back home, as time went by, when I turned 13 years old, sure enough, I had another experience. I had been walking up. There was like two large hills that led up to the garden, and then around it was deep woods. And I was walking up the stairs to go up to check some of the garden blackberries, I think it was what I was looking for. And I happened to glance to this right-hand side because I saw in the daylight, and it was very early, I thought, what in the world is the moon doing out? It was a big ball of white light. And the next thing I knew, it seemed like it was getting larger and larger and coming closer to me. And the next thing I knew, I was enveloped with white light. And there were these small beings within this craft or room that had white suits on. They had the gray-skinned, large bulbous head with black eyes. And that it was at that time, it's lengthy, and Ray Fowler has written a book about this as well. But I was taken to an area, and I had been given an implant. It was at that time they put these little tiny sliver-like things and BB-like things within me. And then they caused me so I did not recall this, of course. This, as I said, it was only 13 years old at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as years went by, I got married, and I had seven children. And we were living in South Ashburnham, Massachusetts. And my husband had been on his way home from work, and he had an auto accident, and so he was hospitalized for a period of time. And so I was at home with the seven children. My mother and father came to stay with me to give me some help, and during that evening, the children were watching television. My mother and father were in the living room sitting on the couch, and I was just standing there. And all of a sudden, a reddish-orange light came flashing through the pantry window. And my father saw it as well. And so we thought, oh, either the police or the fire department.
Yeah,
is
right.
Backyard, yeah. And so what I did was, my father actually did, I should say. He got up first without me realizing it, went behind me, and he went into the kitchen. He actually was the first to see the beings coming toward the house. He had gone into the pantry area, and the pantry area was such there was a half wall there and a window off to the side there, and then there was a window in the back where the light was coming through. And he saw the beings coming down the hill toward the house.
Now, did he say anything, or did he just keep quiet? When
well,
he saw that.
He kept quiet. You know, the thing is, I said, you know, I recalled through hypnosis and everything what had happened, and I remembered, you know, a large portion of what had happened besides being hypnotized. And the researchers, when they realized my father had seen it, had asked me, will you please ask your father if they could speak with him? So I asked him, and he said, Betty, I don't want to get involved. He was really afraid of his Social Security because here I am, a young woman. They may not, they probably would just think I'm a nut or something, you know. But my father had his family grown, and he was living on his Social Security. And so he was worried that his Social Security would be taken away, and also that he probably would take the brunt of all the, what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he then, I said to him, I said, please, Daddy, I need support because I remember them coming into the house and everything. So he decided, okay, so he spoke with the researchers and he signed paper at what he saw.
Wow.
But at that time, when the beings were coming down the hill, he said, what he said was they looked like children in funny costumes, Moon Man costumes. That's what he said they looked like.
Now, was everybody else, your mother and your seven children, now, during this time, were they all, like, suspended?
Yes,
like an animation or frozen or something?
That's exactly what happened. They were in the living room like that. And at that point, there were five beings that had entered my home. Now, evidently, one of the beings had gone over to my father without me realizing it, but they came right through the door. And
you don't mean like opening the door?
They did not open it. They went right through the wooden door, and it was a thick wooden door leading into the kitchen. And so you're standing there, and at first I'm wondering, what in the world is happening? You know, I was a little fearful, but then all of a sudden I've read the Bible, and the scripture came into my mind, entertain the strangers, for that may be angels unaware. And even though they didn't look much like angels to me, or what I, you know, what you see in pictures and everything, what an angel is supposed to look like, who am I to say what God's myriad of angels are supposed to be like?
Right.
So they stood there, and, you know, then peace came over me. Because of the scripture, a peaceful and loving feeling came over me. And they began, the leader who was communicating with me through the mind, I thought he wanted something to eat, but it turned out it wasn't that. He wanted knowledge tried by fire. And the only thing I could think of, well, the Bible has been around a long time, and I knew I had one in the living room on the end table. And so he didn't open his mouth to talk with me. It was through the mind he was presenting and speaking to me.
Yeah. So mental telepathy, right?
Exactly.
And then you say in the book that when you presented him with the Bible, that somehow he was able to like make copies or duplicates of them, right?
Exactly. Yes, he waved when he reached out for the Bible when I was passing it to him. I could see he had three fingers on his hand, so that helped me to even, you know, see exactly what they looked like, even for their structure in the hand and what they were dressed in. They were dressed in blue uniforms, by the way, and they had an eagle uniform. I mean, an eagle emblem, right, on his shoulder. And so we're standing there, and he took the Bible, he passed his other hand over it, and three others appeared, very thin ones. He passed them to the three that were beside him. They held them in their hands, and as they didn't even have to turn the pages. They just flipped over, and there was no writing or printing in there, but they were bright white light, and it seemed as if these other three were consuming whatever was in that bright white light within those pages.
Yeah.
Them as food within their eyes. That's how they were receiving it. Well, you know also that angels desire to know what God is, what his work is to be, and what he intends to do. Even the Word of God tells us that. But anyway,
and then they gave you a book, right, in return?
Yeah. Then he passed me a thin blue book. But I was worried about my family sitting there in this state of suspended animation, and they knew this through my mind, and they allowed my daughter Becky to stand up. And when I saw her stand up, I felt 100% better that everything was all right, but she could not move. All she could do was observe. And as she stood there, she saw the exchange of the thin blue book, and he said to me, this is an initiation, and you are allowed to keep it for 10 days. You look through it and grasp as much as you possibly can from it. And within it was writings and some pictures. That is what the thin blue book was all about. So I put the thin blue book back down on the table, and then I got in back of the leader, and we went out of the house. We went into the kitchen again, and out through the door, and I went right through the door with them. I don't know how it happened, but we went right through the door and through the porch and around to the left, and his craft, or the ship, was sitting on a small hill off to the left and back where the pantry window in the back of the house was. we stood there, and he raised his hand, and when he did, the whole lower part of the body of the craft became sort of translucent, so I could see right inside of it, and it had these big, huge crystal, like big balls on the end, and they had these stems that connected to it that went up and had another ball of crystal on the top, and there was two armatures that came out of the stem, metallic stem, and that held a crystal-like wheel. And then there was a tube that ran all around, and there were three of these type things.
Now, they just took you aboard, right? They left your father at the house, right?
Yes, they did, yeah.
Okay.
I was the only one that went with them, right. And it was at that time, and they brought me, first of all, I won't go into every detail because there were different things that happened, but I was told to change. They got into the gown that they had there for me to put on, that they were going to measure me for light, and they brought me into another room and put me on the table, and they had the fan light thing that they were measuring me for light with. However, then they said that I was not filled with the light completely, that I had some spots on my back of my knee. I don't know what they were talking about, but I objected and says, I think I'm filled with the light. I really believe I'm filled with the light. Well, he says, well, I have to do an examination of you now. So it was a physical examination that they started with. And what they did was they did a procreation check of me, and they had a needle with tubes, and they put the needle into my navel, and I could feel the vibration moving around in my stomach area. And suddenly one of the beings came over to the other, and they stopped, and they had this roll that they pulled out of some kind of material. And then the leader, Krasgar, said to me, there's something missing. And the only thing that was missing is I had a hysterectomy about 2 years earlier.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's what was missing.
Right.
And then they also began to do another check with me, where they had another long needle that had these thin tubes connected to it, and they thrust it into my left nostril, and the leader, Krasgar, put his hand on my forehead to take away the great deal of the pain that I felt at first when they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did, I could feel it breaking through. It wasn't as painful at that time with his hand on my forehead. And then when he pulled it out, there was like a small little ball on the end of it, a BB-like type thing, with little whiskers like on it. And evidently that was what was given to me, one of the things that were given to me when I was 13 years old, when they had taken me up into a moonship. To a place where they put different types of the little slivers and little BBs in me as implants.
Hmm.
After that, I was brought back and told to change. And, of course, as I said, there's a lot of details that can be read in the Andreasen Affair, because Ray Fowler has put all the information in there for the reader to see exactly what happened. Because when you try to explain it, you know, it seems very strange. And for the person listening, they're wondering, what in the world was going on? What is all these strange things happening? Well, the next thing I knew, I was brought into an area that was like a Quonset hut type room, and there were eight chairs in there. There were four on one side, four on the other. They were sort of glass. Clear glass or plastic, I don't know exactly what they were formed of, but they put me in there, and they gave me something very sweet to drink, which made me feel comfortable, put air in for my nose, and then they put the hood down over me, and it filled up with this gray liquid, like watery liquid. And I was there briefly, and after a certain period of time, they came back, and they lifted they drained the liquid out, lifted the hood, took the air away, And I was taken out, and I stood on this, it was like a track, a black track at the time. And there were two beings there. One, and they were dressed in silver suits, by the way. And then we started to move along the track in between these four chairs on both sides. And as we moved along, we went into an area, through a door into an area that was like a cave. And I could tell it was a cave because of the, it was very dark, and there were like, there must have been other entrances in there because it got darker in certain areas, like there was an opening or something. Then the only light I had was from their silver suit, because they had put also upon their heads, the two beings, one in front, one in back, had put a black hood over their head.
Hmm.
And we're moving through this, on this track, and I'm like stuck right to the track, only we're just moving on it. And we're coming up ahead, and I saw like something like light, in a reddish color light, and it was like a mirror. And we went right through the mirror, right through it, just like happened when we went right through the wooden door when they took me out of the house.
Yeah.
We went right through, yeah, the same thing. A hard surface like that, we just went through it, and we entered an area that was bright red atmosphere, and there were these strange little creatures in there.
These are the little red ones, right?
Yes, the red creatures, and they had like two large extensions on their neck, like with black eyes on the end of them. There wasn't really like a round head there, just two, like two necks coming out. I guess that's what you would call it. And we're moving along this track, and there was no vegetation in that area whatsoever, but there were buildings with square openings and doors or whatever there, and it was all red atmosphere. And we're just moving on the track, and as we kept on moving, and the two beings that were with me had the black hoods on their head. They never provided me with one. Evidently thought my long black hair was enough for whatever reason. And instead, we moved right toward a circular thing that was going round and round in the red atmosphere, and it was turning like with the red and the green just kept swirling. And we moved right through that. We moved right through that entrance of that whirling, whatever it was, I don't know. And we're on the track, and we're keeping going. And as we go, I looked down, and I could see a green ocean underneath. It was huge. It looked like glass domes and pointed pinnacles, and there were like black tracks running all as if that's how they traveled to get in and out of there.
Did it feel, when you were seeing these different worlds or whatever you were experiencing while moving along this track or like a conveyor belt, did you get the sense that you were outside but just somewhere else, or did you get the feeling that maybe this was underground? Or I guess I'm trying to visualize what you're seeing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it didn't seem like I was underground because there was atmosphere, and I could look up, and it just looked like sky, green sky.
Hmm.
As we moved along on this track, and we went past the city that was off to the left. Now, what was strange was I didn't see much on the right. I don't know why, but I couldn't see much on the right. Just I could see the water below and the green atmosphere just stretched onward. And as we moved along this track, I looked off to the left after the city, and there was this three-sided pyramid. And on the pyramid was a head, and it looked very much like an Egyptian head, with the type of hat they wear. Mm-hmm. and everything. Matter of fact, during a lecture, a person gave me a magazine, I think it was Hoagland, had a picture, and I couldn't believe how much that looked almost identical to what I had seen, and I guess that was on the face on Mars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it looked just like that, and the head, and it was big, it was huge, And so was the pyramid, very huge, because I'm looking down at it as we're going past, but it was very, very big. And it was a three-sided pyramid, flat in the front, and then it went out to the back. And they had white was on the edges of that three-sided pyramid. And then we continued to move, and it's still this green atmosphere, but it started to get very, very bright. Like light was penetrating the area, and it started to look more like almost getting into light blue with the green. And I could look ahead and I could see bright light there, and we're moving on the track, and it was magnificent what I saw. It was like crystals hanging in the air, all different colors crystals, and they're moving sort of, and the light is just shining all over, so there was like rainbows and everything going on there. It was just so, words are not capable of how beautiful it was at that point. And we moved through it on the track. We kept on moving, and we came up to an area, again, where bright white light was shining all over the place. And as we came up to that area, the two smaller beings with silver suits got off and stood to the side, and they took off their hoods. And they said I would have to go further, and I saw how bright it was, and there was something up ahead that was kind of scary looking to me. But what it was, as I moved along with the light shining in back of it, there was this huge eagle with its wings down. I mean, it was enormous with its wings down. I could see the feathers underneath its wings as it had it down were fluttering. They were all fluttering, and there was light streaks beaming out of the back of this huge bird. Now, a lot of people thought afterwards it might have been a phoenix bird, but maybe. I don't know if a phoenix bird looks like an eagle, but to me, being an amateur artist, it looked like an eagle, a huge eagle to me. And there was light shining all in the back of it, and it got very hot. So I came up to that, and as I did, sparks of light were coming out from the eagle and all around from the bright light. And what happened was the sparks were flying all over the place, and it was getting hotter and hotter for me. I don't know if I passed out or what happened, because the next thing I knew, I looked. It was still extreme bright white light, but there was a pile of ashes there, and some of the ashes, they were gray ashes, and some of it was burning. But all of a sudden, out of the gray ashes, I know, you know, it sounds ridiculous what I'm telling you, but I got to tell you just what I saw, period.
Yeah, no, it's just so interesting, you know, it really is.
Well, out of the gray ashes came a big worm, like just like a regular earthworm to me, but it was gray. It came out of the gray ashes there, and there was light all over the place. And off to the side, from the bright light, I heard my name called, and I heard somebody call me Betty, and I turned to where the light was, and the voice said, "You have seen and you have heard. Do you understand?" And I says, "No, I don't understand." I was at that time crying. I just didn't know where I was, what was happening to me, or anything else. And here's a voice telling me, "Do I understand? What is this is all about?" And I says, "No, I don't understand, and I don't even know why I'm here."
Yeah.
And at that point, the voice again spoke. And it was loud, a beautiful voice, but it was so bright there. And the voice said to me, "I have chosen you to show the world." And I didn't know what it was that I was chosen for. I thought it was probably being a Christian. I thought, well, is this my Lord Jesus? Is Jesus here? And it was so... you know, it's hard for me to put in words again, because it was so unusual and strange, but yet beautiful. And then I had turned around, the little beings came toward me. They put their hood back on their heads, and we traveled down the track, the black track, again, right back past the gems that were hanging in mid-air, and past the three-sided pyramid, the city, and into the red atmosphere again. And we moved through the red atmosphere again into the first in through the, it was like a cave, a long cave, and then into the place where they had the Quonset hut type room with those eight chairs, and they set me down in the one to the left, the very first one. There were some metal things on there, and I felt a slight shock when they set me in that one. And all I remember is the being coming over and lifting one of my eyes, eyelids looking at me to see what was the matter. I don't know. But after that long period of time, I was taken back into my home so that we can save time. And if the readers are interested, they can see all the things that happened. And when I got into my home, we went right through the door again. And one of the beings went over to my father. He had a ball of light in his hand, and he turned his hand, and the ball of light rolled over on the top of his hand, and my father shuffled out of the pantry area. And I said, "Daddy, Daddy," and he wouldn't answer me, as if he didn't even know what was going on. And he just shuffled off into the living room where my mother and the children were. And at that point, Becky was sitting down. So after that, the thin blue book was there for me, and I was supposed to keep that away so nobody could see it for 10 days. But anyways, they put us to bed. There was more involved there. And what I did was I put the blue book up in my bedroom, up in the closet on the shelf. Well, a few days later, my daughter Becky came to me. And she says, "Mommy, I've been having a bad dream for like 3 days. I'm seeing some people in our house that don't look right." And I recognized she was seeing it when they took her out of the suspended animation. She couldn't move, but she was seeing what was going on.
Right.
And I says, "Becky, don't say anything. I don't want you scaring the kids. You know, I'm going to show you what happened. It's real, but don't say anything to your brothers and sisters." I took her into my bedroom, took the book, the thin book from the closet, held it in my hands, and she put her hand on top of the book. And when she did, she lifted her hand, and there were all sparkles all over her hand. And since that time, she's able to write in an unusual language. So I think she received something just by touching the book.
Wow.
And she does that today. She can write in the odd language. And after that, that is what took place in the 1967 encounter.
Wow. Now, how long was it from the time from 1967 till you decided to come out with this story? And then how did you go about talking with someone or finding someone even to talk to? I know that you mentioned that you got to speak with Dr. Hynek, but how did you go about finding him and getting in touch?
Well, it wasn't Dr. Hynek. It was Raymond Fowler.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
It was MUFON that got in touch with me. That's how the information was, once it was brought out through going through also regressive hypnosis. It was a group of researchers that were present, and Ray Fowler, who is the author of the book, he asked if he could do a book on it, and I says, okay. And that is how the book got out there and the information. And I've had other encounters since then. Right now, Bob and I are doing a book called Lifting the Veil, because I've had another experience with the one. It's a more of a personal one, but a lot of people seem to be interested in what has happened to us. So what we've done is we've put down, the story of our life up till a certain point, and I've also did a summary of all the experiences I've had, and Bob as well. And then it goes to the last experience with the one. And so this is a book we are doing right now, and it has to see if it's going to be published or not.
Yeah. Now, Bob, I know you've been patiently waiting over there, minding your manners and being quiet, but you too have had some experiences on your own before you, I guess, met Betty. And then since you were married, the two of you have actually been had some experiences together. Is that correct?
Right, right. I met Betty in 1977, but that journey to meet her started in 1944. In 1944, I was living at my grandmother's house with my mother because my five uncles and my dad were all overseas during World War II. My uncles had built me a swing set in the backyard at my grandmother's, and as a young boy, I was out there, you know, enjoying the swing set one day, and I saw light in the sky that was unusual because it was a different color than the sun. It was very bright, and it came closer and closer and closer, and finally there was actually a craft, a saucer-shaped craft with a glass dome on top, and it stopped above and to the left of my swing set. At that time, it emitted a very thin white beam of light about the size of a pencil lead that struck me in the forehead between the eyes, and I became paralyzed. The thing tipped, and I could see inside what I then called little people, and which turned out to be what would be a typical gray today. They told me in my mind that they were preparing something for mankind that would be good. And they also said that people like me that who saw them at that time, they said they had been to many, many people, and that in the future, these people would meet, and they would not be fearful at what they were seeing. Well, I had a little bit of confirmation of that because we had a victory garden, as many people did during World War II, and where this thing had stopped, nothing would grow for years and years after, not even grass. And further confirmation, after I had been introduced to the people at MUFON, they brought in a psychic that was very good. She had been worked for the government tracking Soviet submarines back in the 60s. She worked with the state and local police. She described to me, using psychometry, exactly what had happened. But she said, and in the backyard there are pipes and vines. So I said, well, you know, it sounded pretty good at first, but she's off on this. And then I had talked to my parents, to my mother, and she said, yeah, your grandfather had built pipe arbors, and there was grapevines off to the left there, which I didn't even remember. So she had information that I had lost, which is a little bit of confirmation, makes you feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
Then we go along to 1967 in the summer, and I'm a young man. I'm on my way to the beach. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning. I came by an area known as the New Haven Trap Rock, and there were five men working on a railroad spur that went into the quarry there, and they were all looking up in the air. So naturally, I looked up to see what the attraction was, and I saw these two huge cigar-shaped, if you will, objects, and they were very bright, like highly polished chrome reflecting sunlight. I pulled over my car immediately to watch. I'd always been involved in technical things, from everything from model airplanes, cars, race cars, whatever. And immediately it became apparent these are not airplanes. There are no wings, no right. tail section, no noise, no exhaust. Okay, not an airplane for sure. I sat there and watched, and from where I was, they were both headed toward New Haven, Connecticut. After a short period of time, two smaller objects dropped out of the larger ones, one out of the center of each of the larger ones. One went off toward New Haven, one went in the opposite direction. So this being extremely interesting, I watched till they were totally out of sight. Started my trip back toward the beach, and I got down the road a few miles, and this was a very rural area. There were no houses there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these objects came back toward me, and it came down like a falling leaf comes out of a tree during the fall, and kind of rocking back and forth, stopped about several feet above the ground. Now, all this is conscious memory. I looked at this thing, and I'm amazed. It's just sitting there above the ground. There's no landing gear under it. It's just in midair. And all of a sudden, there was a brilliant blast of red, intense red light, like maybe a ruby ray laser, a ruby rod laser, mm-hmm. Very intense red light. And now I'm inside this thing. And the first thing, obviously, scared the daylights out of me. I hate to admit it, but it did.
Yeah.
And I was told, or asked or told, I don't remember, to remove my clothing, which I did, and I believe mostly out of fear. There were five of these little gray guys in there, similar to what Betty had seen, the typical gray, except they had on red uniforms, and there was a lightning bolt on the left side of the chest. I was put on a table, very unusual table. It looked like plexiglass, but when I was put on it, it's almost like I was super glued to it. There were no restraints visible, and yet I could not move anything except a little movement of my head and my eyes. I was given an exam. They took samples of skin. They took samples of my fingernails. They took sperm, and not in a very pleasant way. I was scanned with something that was like a modern-day X-ray machine, only this actually emitted light that came out into the air. It was a pinkish-white light, and it was almost like a sparkler. You know how they give off their...
Yes, sir.
Okay, almost like that. That concluded the examination. I was put back in the car, got to the beach, which should have taken a half hour, and I had almost 3 hours of time was gone.
Oh, wow. So you had missing time experience.
Exactly. And I never knew where that time was for years until I went to MUFON, and the investigators wanted to do hypnosis and all, which I said, sure. At that time, I had only told my parents, my best friend, and, of course, my first wife at the time was aware of it. So at that time, I really, you know, struggled with this for a while. But anyways, in 1977, a friend of mine said, hey, Bob, he says, you know, I'd like to take a trip out west. I'd like to look around, maybe move my family out there. He says, what do you say? You want to take a trip? Now, I'd always been a hardworking guy, and I worked a lot of hours. At this particular time, I was a service manager for a new car dealership. I had a really good salary. I had a brand new car every 3 months for a demo. I had all my benefits. And Eddie, my friend, said, well, it'd probably take us about a month. So I said, okay. I had a camp trailer. I said, let's do it. Well, I went into my boss, and I told him I wanted a month off. And he said, oh, no. He says, we can't spare you for a month. So I went home, thought about it over the weekend. I came in Monday. I said, Bob, there's only three things we can do here. I said, you can let me go. I can quit or you can fire me, but I'm going. Now, this is totally out of character for me. I'm a single guy at the time. I'm making good money, got a great job, and I was just ready to throw it away because I had to take this trip. Well, we took the trip. We had been down in Texas, in fact, in Arlington, and out in California, Washington State. We were headed back home across the northern part of the country to Connecticut. And on the spur of the moment at a rest area, we decided to go to Florida, which is several thousand miles out of our way. We get to Florida. Eddie has a sister-in-law there. So we go to visit her. We parked our camper on her property. And the second night we were there, during supper, she mentioned that she knew a woman that had a UFO experience. I said, wow, you know, I'd love to meet this woman. This would be somebody I could talk to without being fear of ridicule or getting locked up or whatever. The woman turned out to be Betty. I went down to talk to her. She would not talk to me because Ray Fowler told her there'll be reporters after you. You don't talk to anybody. So it took me quite a bit of time. I finally convinced her, you know, that I was not a reporter, made a date for the following day to take her out for lunch, and pretty much I'd been having lunch with her from that day
ever
forth.
Ever since, right?
Exactly. Ever since. Now, the one thing, had I known then what we were going to run into as far as the different things with the UFO phenomena that happened and the harassment we got from the government, I don't know, I might have given it a little thought before we watered that lunch at that time.
You sly dog. Well, you're right. The harassment. I mean, I was looking on your website, and everybody, I urge you to go there too, the AndreessenAffair.com.
Right.
You've got some, I mean, you've got actual letters that have been written back to you from the majors of the U.S. Army and other FBI and things talking about how they admitted to tapping your phone.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
things.
My computer was hacked by the United States Navy Space Weapons System Division, and 48 hours later, it was hacked by the Army.
Right. Now how did you know that they had hacked it? Like, what were you doing? Were you just... It
well, at the shortly before that had happened, I was working as a computer technician,
uh-huh.
and I have very good security software. In fact, I still do have very good security software.
I got you.
And the software that I had gave me the ID of the computer, the physical street address of the computer, the name of the owners of the computer, which was the Department of Defense. So when I wrote to the responsible offices, they sent a letter back and said, yes, it was our computers. They admitted it.
Yeah.
Probably by mistake, because they told me an investigation would be done. An investigation was not done. So since then, I have filed Freedom of Information, which they were not cooperative with. So I went to my state senator. He couldn't get anything. I went to the United States Attorney General, they replied that, look, if this is a federal crime, you have to go through the FBI. So I now have it before the FBI, and, you know, I don't know what's going to... I'm sure they're going to fluff me off. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
They're not going to be honest with me, but at least I've got the paperwork to prove
That's
what
right.
I've been saying. Also, we were harassed by military black unmarked helicopters, usually Huey UH-1s and Sikorsky Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, I sent photos of these one of these helicopters out to Bell Helicopter in Texas, where they make them.
Yes, sir.
And a man named Dick Tipton, the public relations guy, sent me a letter back. He said, look, he said, this is our bird, but we never sent it out in this configuration. This has been modified by the Air Force for psychological warfare.
Yeah.
Now, they turned up when we were on vacation. They turned up over our home. They crossed us on the highway one time at an altitude of approximately 50 feet. When they flew over our house, they flew over at treetop level at times, and this is totally illegal. I was getting my pilot's license at the time, and the regulations state a helicopter has to be 500 feet laterally from any buildings. They went right over our house. When we were doing a lecture in Phoenix, Arizona, a man that was obviously military approached me during a break, and he said, we're only sending the helicopters so we do not have to hurt you. So
wow.
I said, thank you. Yeah,
well, and you've got photographs of these helicopters on your website, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I said, yeah, I have hundreds of photos. So I said, thank you, you know. But then we got another warning from Dr. Hynek when we were doing a lecture at MIT, and Dr. Hynek approached Betty when she was on her own. I was talking to someone, and she can tell you what he said.
Yeah, he rushed up to me, and he didn't carry on a conversation at all. He just rushed up to me, and he says, Betty, stick to philosophy and leave the military out of it.
Hmm.
And that was the warning for Bob.
Because, see, we don't...
Had to be.
We decided we're not going to lay down and take it. And what I did, I called the Pentagon. I had gotten contact with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I asked the CIA for an interview. We had the administrator of NASA actually run out on us rather than do an interview with us because I kept harassing them, filing Freedom of Information Act requests, phone calls, which I recorded the phone calls. And somebody said, well, I mentioned that on a television show, and they said, you know, you can get in trouble for recording them. I said, hey, they're tapping our phone.
Yeah.
What's fair is fair. And For example, Betty and I had taken off in the middle of the night during the winter, and when we were living in Connecticut, we went to Florida. Didn't tell anybody where we were going. The FBI showed up 3 days later at my place of employment. They questioned my coworkers. They questioned my supervisors. They wanted to know where we were. When we got back, we went to the FBI building in New Haven, Connecticut, talked to an agent. Of course, they would neither confirm nor deny that they were there, even though the guys had photo ID badges. And while we were there, I said, why are you guys tapping our telephone? And he said, well, he said, in your case, it's not us, it's Air Force Intelligence. Mm. But when I talked to Air Force Intelligence, they said, oh, no, we'd need a court order. It's the FBI. So, you know, then also we were followed by cars just a number of times. But as a youngster, I used to build race cars and race on the street because there was no racetracks near where we lived. So, to make a long story short, I was able to get behind these cars on several occasions and get the license plates, which I gave to Police Lieutenant Larry Fawcett, who was also a UFO investigator, and they came back as unissued plates. So that'll give you some idea. That's not your average Joe that's driving cars with unissued
plates. Yeah, yeah, wow.
And they also use the IRS. Am I running you out of time?
No, you're fine.
Okay. They also use the IRS as another form of intimidation. And the first audit we had four in a row the first 4 years, and they asked Betty questions like, what did you see? What did they look like? What was the craft like? Highly unusual questions for an IRS audit. But they got nasty later on, and see, we wouldn't let up. Like the helicopters that were flying over the house, I had some of the pictures sent to Kodak, had them blown up to 20 by 40, and we put them on network television. And then the flight stopped for a little while, but they did resume within, I think it was about 10 days or so, they started again. So, you know, we weren't bending under to them, and they didn't like it. So we got, like, some unusual threatening phone calls and things like that, but nothing much ever came of them. They were actually kind of humorous. One call... And I do have this taped also because I tapped our own phone. I cut my recorder right into the line. And the guy says, we're coming to your house and we're going to beat your butt and all this stuff with two of them. And I says, let's make sure you got the address right. You got a pencil? And the guy says, yeah. So I told him where to stick his pencil. And the guy turns around. He sounds almost comical in a moose-like voice. He says to the other guy, he said, don't stick my pen up, you know. So some of it was humorous. Also, with the helicopters, I had a friend that was had been in the military, and he knew my sense of humor. So we got together, and he built an exact replica of a surface-to-air missile. And I said, okay, we can have some fun with this. Well, after a few days, of course, we heard the familiar wop, wop, wop of a Huey, and it was approaching our house from the north. Now, I knew exactly what he was seeing because I'd flown over the house myself. He was coming in low, so he wouldn't really see the backyard until he pretty much almost cleared the roof. Well, that black Huey came along. Once he saw the backyard, he turned that helicopter up on its side and made a very sharp, evasive maneuver to the right. I thought he was going to pull the blades off the thing. And I told Betty, I says, this guy's headed back where he come from. He's going to get himself a shower and a change of clothes. I won't bear any ill will against the guys that were doing it because they're just following orders.
Yeah, but still, they're just harassing people, you know?
Well, one of the reasons, too, the helicopters came over quite often is because I received messages from the beings at times through mental telepathy, and I would write that information down immediately. But the minute you would hear the wop, wop, wop of the helicopter coming toward the house, it cut off our communication, the beings of my communication, and I think they were trying to hone in to wherever it was being sent from.
Wow, man, that's an incredible story. Well, we don't want to give the whole book away, but thank you so much for coming on and telling us about your encounters. Now, the website, again, is andresenaffair.com. Is there any other websites where people can go and purchase this book or contact you?
Well, Amazon.com is actually selling the book, but on our website, the first page, the home page, Raymond Fowler has got a part on there, and he has all of the other books, all five books, if somebody's interested in looking up, you know, various parts of the story, because it's so long.
There's quite a few experiences there.
Yeah, okay. Well, I will put all of that in our show notes. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on.
Oh, thank you. It's our pleasure, believe me.
Okay, well, you take care.
Nice to speak with you, Kyle.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Kim, I know you were very quiet during that interview, and I've done the same thing in the reverse sometimes. When you have a guest that's just telling their story, you don't want to keep interrupting them.
You're exactly right.
You don't want
right.
to dis... You know, yeah. There's a lot of shows where I hear where the host is constantly derailing the guest. You know, I know some of the story because I've read the book.
Yes.
But I don't want to constantly interrupt them. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
but what
exactly
did you think
right.
about it? So I know that you didn't have a chance to jump in, but what are your thoughts? I think it's odd that Betty, the version that came to her, now this is, let me finish this line of thought. They had blue uniforms with an eagle emblem. Mm-hmm. Now, Bob, he was abducted. They had red uniforms and a lightning bolt emblem. It's almost like it's a different branch,
yes,
of the same thing. Yeah. Or, and you know, and Betty has the more Christian based
abduction ideas. Yes.
Is it like they know what you're thinking? They know what your belief system is. They know your thoughts, and that's how they're appearing to you. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and that's the look, we'll discuss it this way because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and I'm not going to discount or discredit anything. I don't know what happened. Something happened.
Oh, absolutely.
Something happened. Before we even get down this line, folks, if you do any kind of research, you're going to find out where Bob's son released a letter. And you can find that. I think it's been on. They talked about it a little on Above Top Secret. I know Phantoms and Monsters actually had talked about it. But it actually came out in like 2007 that people were talking about this. And he was claiming it was a hoax. His son, Bob's son, not Betty's. It's Betty's stepson. But Bob's son was claiming that it was all a hoax.
Right.
That it was all made up, and they actually address it on their website. And apparently the son ended up passing away when he was 43, and they say, of course, from that he was heavily involved in drugs and alcohol. Now, you can play both sides of that. You can say, well, they're saying that now after he's passed away, but maybe it was one of those things. You know, you can argue that, but you can also argue that, like you and I have discussed, on any side of anything that's paranormal or not the same or what we don't understand, you can argue both sides of that and going, look, I think Kyle's a liar. And you can do that both ways. We're not here to do that. I'm not here to say it was a hoax. I'm not here to say that it's true. I don't know. It's a fascinating story that freaks me out. It really does bother me because, like you said, they come to Betty and her Christian faith, she takes them as Christian. And she receives those messages.
Yes.
Is that the way that they broadcast themselves so they know you understand and it'll stick with you? If you are heavily in that faith,
it'll stick with you. Boom. Now you're going to believe it more. You're going to believe I'm an angel. You're going to believe more of what I'm telling you as you would be to where you might not be able to comprehend it if it was another faith.
They curtail your abduction experience
exactly.
to fit what they think will work the best. You know what I mean? That's what it seems
and
like.
And then
to
also
me.
Listening to those, like you talked about, the Thunderbolt and the outfits, you listen to what Bob says and what Betty says. Is it even alien? Is it extraterrestrial? Or is it time travelers? Are these time travelers from the future? And we still kind of wear those little outfits as far as this space and time travel.
Well, and I like the idea of...
And that would also, I don't mean to cut you off, but that would also explain some of the Christian ideas of them knowing the Christian faith is that they're time travelers, that they're coming back, and they know exactly how to play it out to you, and they see whatever kind of religion you offer up, well, then that's what they just hook onto and go from there.
Right, and I like when she talks about moving along that conveyor belt, that track, and it was green, and you could see a whole city.
Mm-hmm.
And I even asked her. She said it felt like she was outside. I mean, it was a vast place with a green ocean underneath. I mean, I don't know. I think something happened because, first of all, it's a crazy story. I mean, it's so crazy. Why would somebody make that up? It's so fantastical. And it's happened throughout her life, and her father had similar experiences. She talks about her own children have gone on now and had mm-hmm. similar experiences. Now, Bob, he too has had many instances throughout his life where this has happened. And, I mean, there's letters on their website that show from the government talking about they admitted that they were tapping their computers, mm-hmm. the black helicopters, the suspicious vehicles following them. If this was all made up, then why is everybody watching them?
I agree.
You know, and famous researchers have worked with them. I mean, like Raymond Fowler, when he went back and he hooked them to lie detector tests, which they all passed. They had hypnotic regression sessions. I mean, he worked on it for 12 months, and that's what this book is. It has the transcripts almost from all those hypnosis sessions. I mean, these guys they're trained in that, and they know how to tell if somebody's not making – if they're making something up or they're not, you know. And even Dr. J. Allen Hynek, I mean, he wrote the foreword to it. I mean, mm-hmm. he's familiar with these stories, and he says something happened. So I have to go on that. I think something happened.
Well, and I also know this. Look, folks, everybody that's listening, you never told a lie before? And when you tell a lie, usually it's get you caught, and especially one that is extremely intricate. If you're going to tell a lie to go, I didn't break that, or I found it broke, or the dog knocked it off, then it's just between you and the dog. All right, that's it. And all you say is it's broken. That's a real simple lie that you can cover up.
Yeah. This has been going on for over 40 years.
And you start talking about intricacies where she's telling the colors of the outfits, the whole thing. It's one of those things that you would think that somewhere along the line, it's one of two things. Either it's all a lie and they've both told it so much that they believe it 100% so it doesn't feel like it anymore, or it's 100% an actual thing that happened to them. Or it let's put it this, they believe that what they felt and all that was 100% a legit thing that happened to them. The problem is none of us will ever know.
No, you'll never know.
You'll never know. We only have to go off what we feel and what we hear them tell and what's in the book. It's creepy. Like I said, I like all the subjects. I hate these abduction subjects. I don't like any of that.
It scares me.
Yeah, well, yeah, I do. I don't enjoy any of it.
It's one of those things scary. It's very creepy to me. I'd be terrified to
if I'm honest. I don't even want to think about the whole thing. Like I said, folks, I don't know. I mean, it's wishy-washy. I get it. It's middle of the road. I get it. Look, but I'll just have to be that because I don't know. I'm just going to take it as what she told me and what he told me has happened and move on from there. It's a great story. I'm not going to dwell on it. I dwell on it, I get all freaked out. So yep. I don't need that in my life, man. Yeah, I got enough stuff to think about.
Well, if you are interested in UFOs and the abductee scenarios, go to New Page Books, or you can go to Amazon. You can go over to the show notes there on expandedperspectives.com, and I'll have links to all that where you can buy the book. Or if you just want to hurry up and do it, it's The Andreessen Affair, The True Story of a Close Encounter of the Fourth Kind by Raymond Fowler. Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, it is interesting, but I got something that's interesting too here. We got a good friend of ours and a really great artist. His name is Mr. Sam Sheeran, and he is doing something really, really awesome. Folks, yeah. For all of y'all that love, I guess, Walking Dead or 28 Days Later, any if you're down with zombies in any form or fashion and you want a portrait of yourself, of your entire family, the pets, everything, you need to go here. Now go to info@mr-sam.com.
and he'll draw them for you. Now, there's discounts available for couples and for families and all this, but here's the cool thing. It's going into a book. It's going to be compiled into a large zombified book, and not only that, but for everybody that gets it done, each person that gets it done receives a large, full-color, signed, printed poster that's 24x16.
Yeah.
So if you want to, you can go to his Facebook page, is Mr.-Sam. You can check out his artwork there. You can also find him on Twitter. Dude, Sam's awesome. I mean, he is a legit badass artist. I don't know how these guys do it, but yeah, if you're down with zombies, me and Kyle have been talking about this, and we're like, we may have to get zombified for the show,
right? I mean,
man.
It's pretty cool. I'd definitely like to have a picture of me and you zombified.
I would love to have that. Yeah, I think that would be awesome to do and have the picture to hang in here. But yeah, folks, whatever you do, if you're really interested, check it out. info@mr-sam.com. Shoot him an email. He'll talk with you. And the dude is legit. He does tons of artwork for musicians. He's done a lot of artwork for album covers for like Rob Zombie, things like that. So folks, check it out if you're into the zombies. It's pretty awesome.
Right. Well, that's about it for today's show, everybody. For you elite members, we'll be speaking to you again on Thursday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday. Please be safe. Wear your seatbelts. Be careful out there and don't work too hard.
Brush your teeth. And give somebody a hug.
That's right. This is Expanded Perspectives.
Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.